Hello, Liberty lovers, and welcome to the Liberty Mike podcast, broadcasting from an undisclosed location in the heart of Dixie. I am Michael, and I'm here with Liberty Larry.
How's it going?
And Callie.
Again.
Yeah.
This is becoming a thing.
Yes. All right. Well, we want to just kind of jump right into it, or?
Yeah, we can. So I think the first thing we wanted to talk about was the UPS guy that was shot in Miami. That deal was, I don't know if anybody has seen the video or whatnot from it, but as the story goes, what happened is these two guys came in to rob a jewelry store. And when they went to leave, they were, I guess they had a U-Haul truck that they had rented or something. Well, something happened and they ended up like hijacking a UPS truck, and they had a high-speed chase. They went like 26 miles, I believe. And, the police, which the whole way, I mean, this deal was crazy. So, like, it was like a shootout the whole way. Like, the guys in the UPS truck were, like, shooting at the cops and whatnot. But once they hit the traffic jam, the police got out of their cars, hid behind, like, other civilian cars and whatnot with, like, people in them and whatnot, and basically just unloaded on this truck. And in the end, they ended up killing the two hijackers, the UPS guy, and a bystander.
Yeah, I would consider the UPS guy a bystander, actually, too.
Well, no, that's what I mean. He is a bystander. No, absolutely. There's no question.
Yeah, it was like 70-year-old man coming home from work or something like that.
Yeah, he was in the thing I saw, I think he was actually trying to, like, leave the scene or whatever and just got hit by a stray bullet.
Yeah.
Which, when you say, I mean, honestly, I'm surprised they didn't hit as many innocent bystanders. I'm surprised they didn't hit more people.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they just – and I get the frustration of, you know, this guy had been driving down the road shooting at them the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I get being irritated.
Well, there's a couple of things on that, though.
But you have to, like, take root of the situation. I mean, the idea is to protect civilians, not use them as – shields and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Human shields, seriously. I saw the video too. There's so many things wrong with it that I don't even really know where to begin. And so my dad spent 30 years in law enforcement, and I talked to him a little bit about it today.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know what he thought.
Well, he thought it was excessive. Certainly.
So he did agree with it.
They fired over 200 rounds, like 19 officers or something like that fired their weapons, and they fired over 200 rounds into this UPS truck. I saw a video also as they were moving the truck, I guess.
Yeah.
Somebody had seen it pulled up beside it with their cell phone. And
oh, no, like I saw that. Video. I saw some videos where they were, I guess they had it on the truck hauler or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, it's on the flatbed, and it's like coming by, and just like doused in bullet holes. Like,
yeah.
What? And at the time, not everybody knew. I guess whoever had posted the video I watched didn't know, was just like, what happened to this UPS truck? Like, they hadn't heard about the shooting or whatever. It was like, what happened here?
Yeah, it was covered in holes. And
yeah.
There's a few things about that. Like, the guys were in specific places. They were all in the front.
Yeah.
I mean, there were bullet holes all the way to the back of that truck.
Yeah.
Down the side. Like, that's some pretty terrible shooting, first off.
Right.
Secondly, well, the other thing, okay, so Dad said that he thought it was excessive.
Yeah.
But he said you also got to understand that once the bullets start going... The tendency is to start pulling the trigger.
Yeah.
But these guys
are still trained, though. I mean, they should...
Yeah, at least they're supposed to. I mean, Broward County has not made its reputation.
Well, there's a reason I dropped that in there. It's because we know the reputation of this county. But it wasn't all Broward County, though.
No.
I mean, a lot of these guys were from, I guess, Miami, where it had happened. And they ended up in Broward County. So I'm sure some of them were Broward guys.
But... Yeah, so it went from Dade County to Broward County.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they haven't really released any additional information at this point. I saw that the father of the UPS truck driver had openly accused the police of murdering his son.
Yeah. I mean, and some of that you kind of chalk up to, well, that was this kid and all. But, I mean, I don't disagree with the guy.
Yeah. Well, they'll do their investigation, and we may or may not ever find out, actually, who's responsible.
Another interesting tidbit is the FBI is the one doing the investigation right now, which is kind of strange because both of the perps were killed, so there's not going to be any charges pressed against those guys.
Right.
So that was just some of the stuff I was reading. And there's also some questions whether or not the FBI had been following these guys before they got to the jewelry store and done all of that. And there's just questions there. The FBI hasn't said or confirmed anything, but there's some suspicion that that may be the case. So...
Sorry, everyone, if you can hear that. I'm trying to slide the microphone a little closer to Gary because he can't speak up.
I'm speaking up fine.
I've given him the symbol, but maybe he just thought I was saying, good job.
Maybe.
anyway, I think there's... The main thing is that it shouldn't have come to this situation.
Yeah.
Right? Like, All right. Used to listen to Jason Stapleton a lot.
Absolutely.
I don't anymore. But one thing that sticks out to me, because it came up more than once in the course of his podcast, which is just the Jason Stapleton Show, if you want to check it out. But it's not the same show as it was when I would have recommended it. It's not the – I mean, like, they've completely changed focus. But anyway – you know, he's a U.S. Marine Corps Force Recon.
Yeah.
Like, and after he came back from the service, he worked for a little while as a prison guard.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember him talking about that.
Vaguely, yeah.
And one of the things that he said he learned during the course of his work as a prison guard is that you always give them an out.
Yeah.
Like, they need an escape route. Like, never make somebody feel trapped, because that's when violence happens.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what happened here. The guys, the perpetrators felt trapped and they just started firing. They were stuck. There were police all around and they just started firing.
Yeah.
Now we'll come back to the whole, let's use the civilians as human shields thing, but, it shouldn't have even come to that point, because you've got a UPS truck. As I understand it, all UPS trucks have GPS location service.
Yeah.
So they could find this truck at any time. Besides, it's a giant UPS truck. Like, all you need is one helicopter.
Well, I was going to say, and there were multiple helicopters on the scene. So, like, even one... So, apparently, there were multiple helicopters, like, I guess, like, TV station helicopters. And one of those, at least, broadcast the whole thing live on live TV.
Yeah, so that's a video I saw.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's not like they didn't have a... I mean, the police, like you say, I mean, I'm assuming where you're going is they could have backed off and let this truck kind of go some.
Yeah.
And
wait until it was in a place where there was less going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and that would make a lot of sense, because
instead of the middle of a busy intersection.
I was
going to
say, basically, they got... they were in rush hour traffic, was my understanding. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So...
So the, you know, the point there is you just let them... You're not going to lose them.
Yeah.
And the reason to have a hostage, right, is to keep the police from taking you down.
Yeah.
And you know, meanwhile here, they've got a dozen police cars following them until they come to a place where they can't go any farther.
Yeah.
And, you know, my question is then to the police, what did you expect would happen then?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what was the logical outcome here? You know,
and the crazy thing though, is that I saw in the video that once the car came, or the truck came to a stop, all, you know, the police cars pull in behind, they all stop, get out of their cars, and they start moving up both sides. They're like surrounding the vehicle, but with civilian cars between them and the UPS truck.
Yeah.
Intentionally. Like, that's, moving, yeah, using the civilian cars as cover. Yeah. They're not trying to save people. They're not trying to keep people safe. They're not trying to, you know, protect anybody there except themselves.
And that's what got me is it seems to me in that situation what they should have been doing was evacuating people, was getting people out of the area. I mean, and that's what I would expect if I was in that, as a civilian in that situation. I see cops everywhere. Like, do I need to, like, are they after me, for one? Because that's just where my mind goes. And if they're not, maybe I need to be getting out of here, and maybe they should be kind of telling me to get out of here, you know. Yeah. But that didn't really seem like that was the case at all. It was just kind of human shields, like you say.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I was, when I was watching it, I was like, are they using, you know, that guy's car as cover?
Yeah.
Like, with him in it?
With him in it. Well, and, yeah, and it's as simple as open this car door and tell the guy to go.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you
or
can
get behind a wheel well or whatever. I
yeah.
mean, you know.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Try and get him somewhere where he's got some real cover.
Yeah. Evacuate the civilians.
And then when they start firing, they're firing from all sides. Bullets flying everywhere. They create a crossfire in the middle of a rush hour, busy interstate.
Yeah. Which, like I say, I'm amazed that more people weren't hit than what were. It makes you wonder, where's the accountability at? Because what'll end up happening here is you'll end up with an investigation. And, I mean, will anything really change because of it?
Not likely.
And that's what bothers me, is that you can have something like this. I mean, it's barely... I mean, I have seen it on some mainstream media, but it's not to the... I mean, the outrage level just doesn't seem to be where I would think it should be.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Yeah. Remember, this is one set of jewelry store robbers.
Yeah.
Like, one pair of jewelry store robbers that took a hostage, because the police had already intervened, by the way.
Yeah.
And like we were saying, I think it was last episode, those protests that have become increasingly violent with protesters throwing Molotov cocktails in Hong Kong have not resulted in any civilian deaths caused by the police.
Yeah. And then we have a simple jewelry heist, which, mm-hmm, I mean, granted, I'm not condoning, but ends in the way this did. I don't know. With the potential to have been so much worse. I mean, they're extremely lucky it wasn't a lot worse than it was.
Yeah, I agree. So. Well, and that wasn't the only shooting in Florida last week.
No, it wasn't.
One was a little closer to our home, not too far away at the Pensacola Naval Air Station.
Yeah, been there dozens of times, countless times, actually.
Yeah, so that was December 6th, which was what, last Friday, right?
Yeah.
Like a week ago today. So what happened in this case is that a Saudi Air Force officer, something Mohammed Al-Shamrani, he was here for training in U.S.-made high-performance jet fighters.
Nice.
He opened fire in a classroom on the base, killed 3, wounded 8, before he was shot dead by the police. Of the 80 wounded, by the way, 2 of them were responding police officers.
Yeah.
There were 6 total Saudis detained, as I understand it, after the shooting, 3 of whom actually filmed the shooting occur.
Wow.
Like, I think 2 from a car and 1, you know, standing somewhere. I don't recall exactly the details of that, but
yeah.
While the guy acted alone, it doesn't
looks like
seem
he had sympathizers.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And you had said something to me about that they watched a bunch of shooting events or something a few days before.
I saw something where they, a report or something that had said that they had like a party or something and basically just like sat down on YouTube like mass shooter event stuff and just like watch stuff.
See, and I read it as he had a dinner party with friends.
Oh, yeah. That's not what I heard. I heard that there was a party, but that was the activity at the party.
Well, I kept looking after you told me that, and I found
Did
that
you?
Information as well.
Yeah.
That was something that occurred at this dinner party.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole event is, it's being shrouded in secrecy. It's like, oh, well, we don't really know what happened or what it was all about.
And that kind of irritates me because you're right. That's even today. So, like, I was watching the news before I came over here today. And this, of course, happened in Pensacola. So it's on the news here every day right now.
Yeah.
And they're still saying the same thing, that they don't want to confirm what this is. And it's like, man, anybody looking at this objectively knows what it is.
Well, yes, I think that you're right, and actually the shooter, as far as anybody knows anyway, on his Twitter account, was explicit about why he did this.
Yeah.
Although that's been taken down since then.
Of course.
Luckily, the article that I posted on our Facebook page that Scott Horton wrote included the text.
Yeah.
And so for those of you that don't follow the Facebook page or that looked at that really long article and said, I'm not reading this, this is what he said on his Facebook page. And I'm going to read it as it was, so I'm not trying to correct for grammar and so forth, because there's some
issues. There's some problems, yeah.
He says, I'm not against you for just being American. I don't hate you because your freedoms. I hate you because every day you supporting, funding, and committing crimes, not only against Muslims, but also humanity. I am against evil, and America as a whole has turned into a nation of evil. What I see from America is the supporting of Israel, which is invasion of Muslim country. I see invasion of many countries by its troops. I see Guantanamo Bay. I see cruise missiles, cluster bombs, and UAV. Your decision makers, the politicians, the lobbyists, and the major corporations are the ones gaining from your foreign policy, and you are the ones paying the price for it. What benefit is it to the American people to suffer for the sake of supporting Israel? Do you expect to transgress against others and yet be spared retribution? How many more body bags are American families willing to receive? For how long can the U.S. survive this war of attrition? The U.S. Treasury spends billions of dollars in order to give Americans a false sense of security. The security is shared destiny. You will not be safe until we live as reality in Palestine. I think he means Palestine there. And American troops get out of our lands.
Yeah.
Now, this is essentially the same thing that terrorists have said. Like,
every time they commit acts of violence. Like, this is that. That's the same whole spill.
Yeah, but what we're told by our government is that they hate our freedoms and how good we are.
Yeah.
No, what they hate is they hate having bombs being dropped on their families.
Yeah.
They hate us being in there telling them how to run their own countries. You know, we talk about self-governance here all the time. Like, allowing these people self-determination would go a long way to putting an end to this kind of activity.
Absolutely. And, you know, it wouldn't happen, because I got in a debate with somebody about this the other day, it wouldn't happen overnight. Like, if we just started pulling the troops home. But over time, if we started pulling the troops back, you'd see less and less of this stuff, at least in this country. Now, that's not that they're going to fight over there till the end of time. But that's not really that's not really where our focus should be, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe that. I just do.
Well, and, you know, so the Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, said he is, quote, considering several steps to ensure the security of our military installations and the safety of our service members and their families. But he didn't provide details, of course. Now,
I would like for that to be like arming them.
Well, yeah, that's actually something. I mean, I don't want to spend a whole long time talking about that.
That's
because
fine.
I think that was.
But it does need to be brought up, I think.
I mean, that's a focus. I think that that's a misdirected focus of what the story has been on this. But we'll come back to that in a second.
Yeah.
Now, my thought when I read that is, if U.S. military bases in the United States are not secure, then where are we secure?
No joke.
Right? Like, if the military bases here aren't secure from this, then how can you even make the claim that you're securing the country?
Yeah.
That's
true.
There's also the whole thing about, well, we have to fight them over there, so we don't have to fight them over here.
Yeah. Right. Not a good argument.
I think that fallacy has been clearly exposed here.
Yeah.
The longer we fight them over there, the more we end up fighting them over here. Like, we're creating them over here. And this was a Saudi guy. Now, he was over here on it's not exactly an exchange program, but as our military industrial complex sells really expensive United States high-performance jet fighters to these foreign countries, part of the deal is that they'll provide training for their pilots here in the United States.
Oh, okay.
All right. So that's why he was here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
There's a lot of talk about ending that program now.
I
don't know that they will.
They won't, because it's too much money for too many big American companies. I mean, it's not like Lockheed Martin would lose a lot of sales if this wasn't part of the deal.
Yeah.
And you don't want to upset Lockheed Martin, because then you'll get a lot less campaign financing next time around.
I mean, that's the whole reason we're doing all this anyway, is to prop up these military companies.
As much as anything else, I think that you're probably right.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why he was here. And once again, this is a Saudi just like most of the plane hijackers for 9/11.
Yep. Yep.
This is not an enemy country over there.
No, this is supposed to be our ally.
Yeah, this is our big ally besides Israel, right? Israel and Saudi Arabia, those are our big allies. Yet for some reason,
this keeps happening.
The Saudis keep attacking us here in the United States.
Yeah.
And we kind of ignore it. I guess because we're selling them billions of dollars worth of weapons so that we can have an exchange program where their pilots can come over here and do terrorist attacks here.
Yeah.
Well, and we'll pay for their flight.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And so there's so many problems about this. And as far as the gun thing, okay.
Yeah.
I guess it's worth mentioning because that is certainly the focus that people are taking with this.
It has been.
Story is that, he legally purchased a gun here and he shouldn't have been able to do that. And he brought it on base, which he shouldn't have been able to do. Yeah. Because the only people that are supposed to have guns on base are security personnel. Yeah. Now here's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
If that classroom had been full of military personnel with sidearms,
exactly,
it might have been a little harder for him to pull this off.
Yeah, and I don't think he would have attempted it, honestly.
No,
I mean, if he's
not
walking in those classrooms, and I mean, everybody in there is armed, this isn't exactly where I want to be doing this.
Not only armed, but armed and trained.
Yeah,
it's all military guys.
Yeah, well, and that's always been my problem with that policy, because I've heard this for a while. People tell me that, you know, that firearms are heavily restricted on bases, even for military folks, on bases here in the U.S., at least here in the States. And I've never understood that. Here you are, you've got all of these guys that are heavily trained in firearms, and you're not letting them carry them. I mean, it seems like, I mean, the odds are low that there's going to be an attack or something on a base here in the States, but clearly it happens, you know?
Well, and here... you're absolutely right, and I'm moving on.
That's fine.
Okay, because here's the issue that I see. The other issue about this is that supporters of tighter gun laws have seized on this. Another example of why we need more gun restrictions.
Oh yeah, I've been in a few debates about that this week too.
Well, and here's what I would say to them: that you're focusing on the wrong problem.
Exactly.
You're diverting the problem from being a foreign policy issue to a domestic policy issue. And it's not the domestic policy that's the problem here.
Yep.
The problem here is the foreign policy.
Exactly.
And from there, we can go into our last topic, which is a big one, which is the Washington Post publishing their story on the Afghanistan papers and making, you know, something like 2,000 pages of transcripts and stuff available publicly. Now it's mostly interviews. They're a byproduct of a project led by the Office of the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, known as SIGAR. I'm going to say SIGAR because that seems like
for the podcast purposes.
Yeah. It was created by Congress in 2008 to investigate waste and fraud in the war zone. They did this particular project, which by the way cost $11 million by itself.
Oh, wow.
And it's titled Lessons Learned. It was meant to diagnose the policy failures in Afghanistan so the United States would not repeat the mistakes next time it invaded a country or tried to rebuild a shattered one.
Yeah.
So, first off, how do you feel about the underlying assumption there that, well, you know, next time we invade a country...
Well, this is attempt one. On attempt two, we're going to get it better.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get it right next time.
Yeah, there you go. They're using our motto.
And so they interviewed more than 600 people with firsthand experience in the war. The Post has had this information, been trying to publish it for years now.
Oh, really?
And they finally won the release of the documents under a FOIA case. Like I said, they've been fighting over it for like 3 years. And then, so now this is available to us. Now, of course, I haven't read all this.
Yes. I was going to say, I haven't
dug. A lot of
information. I heard that this was out there, but I haven't really sunk my teeth into this much at all.
Well, I've read a bunch of articles about it. Nobody's read the whole thing at this point, except maybe people at the Washington Post that have had it for 3 years.
Well, them and maybe Scott Horton.
Well, yeah, he doesn't sleep. It's a possibility. But I just wanted to cover some things that have come up.
Yeah.
As I've been reading through other people commenting on this stuff.
Yeah.
And of course, the Washington Post article was like Well, there were separate articles, but stitched together, it's like 30 pages.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting read, and they have links to the documents in all the
to
places where
you,
they cite
show
them.
You yeah. where it was at in the document.
Absolutely.
Cool.
And so here's just a few bits from it. Now, and none of this should be new information to anybody listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
Because this is what we've been saying since we started this podcast.
Yeah.
That this was not going well, that this was a waste of time and money that we just needed to get out.
Yeah.
And we've only been doing this podcast for a year. You know, Scott Horton, as an example, wrote an entire book about this years ago.
Yes, he did.
Right.
Yes, he did.
There's been a lot of people that have been calling, that have been saying this. And yeah. Actually, I think that Scott summed up this release as well as anybody, or better than most,
yeah.
Certainly. I heard him in an interview. He was interviewing somebody else, and something about these Afghanistan papers came up. And he said, you know, what they show is that the critics of the war have been right the whole time.
Yeah.
That the government knew it the whole time, and that they've been lying to the public
the whole time. Yeah. That makes nothing but sense.
So here we go. Douglas Lute, he's a 3-star Army general and served at the White House's Afghan war czar during the Bush and Obama administrations. He said, what are we trying to do here? We didn't have the foggiest notion of what we were undertaking in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Some U.S. officials wanted to use the war to turn Afghanistan into a democracy. Well, good luck with that. I mean, we've talked before
about how this doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, there was 600 years of history and cultural change that led to our republic here in the United States.
You can't just install this.
Yeah, you can't make it happen. Others wanted to transform Afghan culture and elevate women's rights. Same kind of thing. Still others wanted to reshape the regional balance of power among Pakistan, India, Iran, and Russia. Now, so my question there was, is it any of our place to try and rebalance power in the Middle East, you know, someplace halfway around the world from us?
Well, that's probably the most honest answer, though. I mean, that's more than likely that's what the true agenda is.
Well,
but not
they
that
were saying
that makes,
some people
not that
wanted
that makes
this.
It okay.
Yeah. Yeah, some people wanted this, some people wanted that. I mean, I'm sure that there were people that wanted to bring, well, I know that there were people that wanted to bring democracy to Afghanistan.
Well, yeah, that was.
I'm sure that there were people that wanted to, you know, bring the culture up and have women's rights and more general freedoms. That kind of fits in with the democracy thing, right?
And there's nothing wrong with that. But
I suspect that most of them wanted to rebalance power and determine who was going to be in control over there.
Exactly.
Mostly us. Yeah. And I also thought, well, you know, how did we intend to do that by killing a bunch of farmers halfway around the world?
Yeah.
They went on to say, was Al-Qaeda the enemy or the Taliban? Was Pakistan a friend or an adversary? What about the Islamic State and the bewildering array of foreign jihadists, let alone the warlords on the CIA's payroll? The U.S. government never settled on an answer, and in the field, the U.S. troops often couldn't tell friend from foe.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked to people that's been over there that's told me that.
Yeah.
That, you know, I mean, they don't know who the enemy is. Like, I mean, they don't.
Did you, by any chance, ever watch the documentary Combat Obscura?
I haven't.
No. Okay. It's available on iTunes.
Okay.
Well, that's where I got it. I got it on iTunes. It's not very expensive. It's about an hour. And the story there is that it was filmed by the U.S. Marine Corps.
Yeah.
They brought a camera, or they had a U.S. Marine Corps camera crew out there to gather footage in Afghanistan for, you know, some kind of reporter documentary, or who knows what they were using it for. I don't remember.
Yeah.
They went out there and they got the footage that was requested of them, and they kept filming
because they had the stuff to do it, right?
Yeah. And so they put together this documentary, and I can't say that it doesn't editorialize, because just by choosing what footage you're going to put in there, you're editorializing to some degree. But there's no commentary over it.
Oh,
it's
really?
It's raw footage.
It's just watching what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, and some of it's interviews with soldiers out there in the field and things like that too. But
yeah,
it was like, I don't know. There were some scenes that were really striking. I suggest that people go watch it. But that was something that was readily apparent, is that they just kind of treated everybody like an enemy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you kind
and of, that's not a good way of promoting, you know, any. It doesn't make your job easier in the long run.
And that's but to do to fight a war like this, you kind of have to do that. And it would be no different if the Chinese came over here and started taking over this country.
Yeah.
They would treat everybody in this country like the enemy because there's no way for them to know who is and who isn't.
Right.
Because when it's that type of warfare, that's just how it's fought.
Yeah. No, and I'm not saying that I don't understand why it was that way.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
I understand why, but it's counterproductive.
But it doesn't work is the point.
And, you know, of course, my answer is we shouldn't be there at all.
Well, like,
there's no reason for us to be there in the first place. And, you know, to that point, we had almost 2,400 U.S. soldiers die in the Afghanistan war. There were more than 20,000 casualties in terms of, you know, wounded in action.
Yeah.
And that's Defense Department figures. There's been more than 150,000 total deaths in Afghanistan. That's Afghan government forces, Taliban and other jihadi forces, U.S. forces, allied forces, etc.
Really?
More than 150,000. And I imagine that the number is actually much bigger than that.
It has to be.
Because this is what they're calling casualties of the war. This is people that were actually killed by you know, some kind of weaponry. It doesn't include all the people that have died from starvation or just general lack of having what they need to survive.
Yeah.
It doesn't include, actually, and the truth is that we know also from these papers that they were manipulating information. We've known for a long time that they were suppressing the number of casualties that they were reporting.
Yeah.
And while something like 60,000 or 40 to 60,000 of these reported casualties were civilians, we also have the reports that they were counting anybody that was in these particular war zones. Like we were talking about with the Vietnam thing from the Pentagon Papers, or actually it was from the general's autobiography later on, but where they were classifying entire areas as anybody that's killed here as a militant.
You know,
even if they're 3 years old, they're a militant.
Exactly.
We're doing the same thing in Afghanistan. And we were just like purposely misreporting numbers of deaths of civilians to try and not create the kind of outrage.
Yeah.
Luckily for them, it's halfway around the world and it's not really affecting Americans for the most part. And so Americans generally don't care.
They just don't bother. Yeah.
But either way, I mean, there's 150,000 reported deaths. It's probably a lot more than that.
Yeah.
I mean, and I've even heard figures, you know, approaching 500,000.
Yeah.
And so, and this also includes around 3,500 U.S. contractors over there.
Yeah.
So we've had about 6,000 American deaths in Afghanistan.
Hmm.
And then, you know, the documents also, they contradict a long chorus of public statements. Some of this I'm quoting from the article. From U.S. presidents, military commanders, and diplomats who assured Americans year after year that they were making progress in Afghanistan and the war was worth fighting. Some examples there. Suicide bombings in Kabul were portrayed as a sign of the Taliban's desperation. The insurgents were too weak to engage in direct combat. Rising U.S. troop deaths was cited as proof the American forces were taking the fight to the enemy. And Bob Crowley, who is an army colonel who served as the senior counterinsurgency advisor to U.S. military commanders in 2013 and 2014. I don't know how they fit these titles on
cards.
Business cards, you know.
Yeah.
He says, every data point was altered to present the best picture possible.
Yeah.
And another senior NSC official said, and this went on for two reasons. To make everyone involved look good, and to make it look like the troops and resources were having the kind of effect where removing them would cause the country to deteriorate.
Yeah.
We gotta keep this going.
Exactly.
I mean, it's the cost has been outrageous as well. The United States allocated more than $133 billion to build up Afghanistan. Now, the war itself has cost us about $1 trillion, more than $1 trillion.
Yeah.
Not way more than, actually, probably once you start figuring in
everything,
you know, VA costs and stuff like that, you know, the down the road cost, it's probably
really
significantly higher than a trillion. But about $1 trillion has been spent on the war so far. And they spent $133 billion to build up Afghanistan. And that's, by the way, more than it's spent, adjusted for inflation, to revive the whole of Western Europe with the Marshall Plan after World War II.
Wow.
All right. Of course, inflation numbers are off as well, because we pretend because the dollar hasn't devalued to the level that it has. But that's a discussion for an economic podcast. We're doing a foreign policy podcast right now.
Yeah.
So one unidentified contractor told the government interviewers he was expected to dole out $3 million daily for projects in a single Afghan district, roughly the size of a U.S. county. He once asked a visiting congressman whether the lawmaker could responsibly spend that kind of money back home. He said, hell no. Well, sir, that's what you just obligated us to spend, and I'm doing it for communities that live in mud huts with no windows. They said the Afghan security forces were incompetent. This was also a big part of the spending, obviously, to try and build up the Afghan security forces.
Yeah.
They're incompetent, unmotivated, rife with deserters. They also accused Afghan commanders of pocketing salaries. And for tens of thousands of ghost soldiers, like names that they put on the books that weren't actually there.
Yeah.
You know, and this NSC official said, we lost objectivity. We were given money, told to spend it, and we did, without reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as these ghost soldiers and things like that, just remember that this $1 trillion and $133 billion to build up Afghanistan, $3 million a day in tiny little places with mud huts and so forth, we're paying for all of that.
Oh, yeah. That's our money.
Yeah. That's taxpayer money all the way. And, you know, as far as the incompetent Afghan security forces, you see it in Scott Horton's book. They're talking about how this is unsustainable. The losses to the Afghan security forces are unsustainable. There's no way that they can maintain their own security without U.S. involvement.
Yeah.
Even with all the money that we're pumping in there. I mean, there's a bunch of stories of that. A lot of these guys are getting in there. They're getting their first paycheck, their rifle, and then they're going and fighting for the Taliban.
Right.
You know, I mean, it just goes on and on.
Or like turning their rifle on U.S. soldiers, like there. I mean, that's happened.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is a complete mess, has been from the beginning, and they've known it from the beginning.
Yeah.
But there's this giant complex of people that are making a lot of money on this, and, you know, there aren't enough Americans that care.
Yeah.
And what I want to hammer home is, because hopefully then you'll start caring, is that, you know, they've spent $1 trillion in Afghanistan. The terror war as a whole has spent somewhere between $6 and $8 trillion in the last 20 years. And that's all your money.
Yep. Exactly.
All your money. This is a way of, it's similar to the foreign aid article that I wrote that was published at the Libertarian Institute. And I've talked about this kind of thing, although it was specifically about military aid to countries.
Yeah.
But it's the same kind of thing with a war as well. That this is a way of extracting money from the taxpayers and then privatizing it into these big military contractors.
Yeah.
They're taking your money and they're giving it to Northrop Grumman and Lockheed Martin and Raytheon and General Dynamics and all of these companies.
Yeah. And then they're giving it to PBS.
Well, and they're giving it to PBS so they get favorable coverage.
Yep.
And they're giving it to your politician to go back into office so that he can run his campaign and get back into the office. It's this big loop where they take money from you, they give it to somebody else who gives it back to them.
Yeah. Right?
Everybody makes out except for the taxpayer.
Yeah, except for the person whose money it was.
Yeah. Well, and presumably the people that are actually fighting over there.
Well,
they're not making out that well either.
No, they're not doing good either.
Although they're getting your money too, but not nearly as much of it.
Yeah, all right.
So, the Washington Post article, and I'm not a big fan of the Washington Post these days, by the way.
Yeah.
But this was good. I think they could have really driven the point home a little bit better. I think they were still kind of fighting with kid gloves with the information that they had.
Yeah.
But all the same, they closed with this statement. I'm just going to quote the whole thing because I thought it was good. I do think the key benchmark is the one I've suggested, which is how many Afghans are getting killed, James Dobbins, the former U.S. diplomat, told a Senate panel in 2009. If the number's going up, you're losing. If the number's going down, you're winning. It's as simple as that. Last year, 3,804 Afghan civilians were killed in the war, according to the United Nations. That is the most in 1 year since the United Nations began tracking casualties a decade ago.
Wow.
So, we're losing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the only way to get out of Afghanistan is to leave.
Is to leave. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And we were this close.
Yeah. Well, they're talking again.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
They've restarted negotiations with the Taliban.
Okay.
There's some kind of... They put a hold on it right now, but it's supposed to be temporary because of some suicide bombing in Kabul.
Oh, yeah.
Was it in Kabul? It was by a military base, so...
Yeah.
Anyway, but as far as I know, they haven't called off the talks again.
Yeah.
And they are talking again.
Well, hey, that's something.
Yeah. And so, but the point that I was going to make also here is that, like, we have all this information now.
Yeah.
About how this is going badly, that they're lying to us about it, and yeah. they just keep wasting our money.
Yeah.
Wasting our money to privatize tax money with these companies that make a living off of war.
Yeah.
And chaos and what have you. And in the midst of all of this, the Congress has signed the 2020 National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA.
Okay.
That gives $738 billion to Department of Defense.
Really?
$738 billion. That's a $30 billion increase over last year. It's $750 billion just to the Department of Defense. Remember, the total budget is just over $4 trillion, right?
Yeah.
Which is still more than we take in.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, essentially 20% of the total budget goes just to the Department of Defense. And that's not all the war stuff.
Yeah. That's insane.
And here's what's more in all of that, in this corrupt, you know, defense thing that we have going on here in this country, is that there were a bunch of good clauses that were in the original write-ups of these bills.
Yeah.
But what was signed, they had a prohibition of military support for the Saudi war in Yemen.
Okay.
It was removed.
Really?
No more prohibition for support of the Saudi war in Yemen. Right. President can do that all he wants. Keep selling them weapons. In fact, keep selling them air-to-ground munitions, which is one of the things that had been originally prohibited in the NDAA.
Yeah.
But now we've essentially said the president can feel free to keep selling the Saudis weapons that they're going to use to blow up farms and irrigation canals and people on the ground.
Wow.
To maintain this genocidal war in Yemen, where they have actively tried to take away the absolute necessities of life, food, water, sanitation, etc.
Insane.
And they can continue to do so now.
Huh.
There was originally a requirement that Congress reconsider the 2001 and 2002 AUMFs. That's the authorization for use of military force.
Yeah.
These were the things that were written up after the 9/11 attacks to give authorization to the U.S. government to prosecute a war, the war on terror.
Yeah.
Now, this was originally... chasing down the people directly responsible for 9/11 and going into Iraq. They added the 2002 ones to justify going into Iraq. Now, these same two things are still in effect now and have been used to justify these wars all over the North Africa and the Middle East, into Central Asia, essentially, at this point. Pakistan, Afghanistan.
So 20 years we've been on the same...
Yeah. Syria, Yemen, Iraq, they're trying to talk about Iran in it, even though that was completely, you know, they've been our allies in the first part of this war. Niger, Mali, Somalia, Libya, all of these things, they've used these two AUMFs. And there was originally a requirement that they reconsider them and probably rewrite them. Now, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because at some point they do rewrite them, and they rewrite them to give them more authority.
Yeah, they don't rewrite them in our favor.
Yeah. But either way, that was removed.
Wow.
Before they signed the bill. There was a requirement for congressional approval before the U.S. could enter a war with Iran.
Yeah.
Now, why you have to put that in the NDAA, I have no idea, because it's in the Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land.
It's supposed to be.
Right? Mm-hmm. So why you have to specify that in an act where it's already specified in the Constitution, I don't know. But either way, They took it out. Wow. And what that's going to be taken by the executive branch is that they're free to begin a war in Iran if they choose without congressional approval. Because we don't do congressional approval anymore. And then finally, there was also originally a prohibition on research and use of low-yield nuclear weapons. That's the tactical nuclear weapons that you hear about. Yeah. You know, not the big, giant city killer H-bombs that we have, but just little nuclear weapons that you can use very precisely. No nuclear weapon is precise.
Yeah, right. This kind of defeats the purpose, right?
Yeah, and so that prohibition was removed, and that's... That might be the most dangerous thing. We may need to spend more time talking about nuclear war on this podcast because I don't think people are scared enough.
Yeah. You know, we've talked about it some, but it probably wouldn't hurt to dive deep into some of that.
Yeah. Everybody go back and listen to Dan Carlin's hardcore history called The Destroyer of Worlds. It's available for free on iTunes. You can do it on YouTube. It's long.
Yeah.
It's like 6 hours. I find it fascinating.
Yeah.
First off, I think that he has done a really good job of is giving you that feeling of
like you're there,
of distress, of that there's always like at any moment could be your last.
Well, he does do a good job with that, but he also does a good job of making it like I felt like I was in those times he was describing, like when he was talking about with Truman and the time after all of that. Like, I just really kind of felt like I was, like, you're there, you know? Like, you're living in those times, and this is what the world was like then, you know?
Yeah.
I
it's right there on the knife's edge.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this might be the most dangerous provision that they removed, because the idea is that it's like this controlled escalation.
Yeah.
That, well, you know, we can use a low-yield nuclear weapon to... Show Russia that we mean business.
You think that they're just going to not respond to that?
Yeah, and they're not going to respond with a nuclear weapon, of course.
Because, yeah, why would they do that? Yeah. Like, it's not like they don't have a ton of them.
And, you know,
already gave them a reason to do it.
Like, exactly. I know that this sounds a lot of times on this podcast like I'm a Blame America First person, and I'm not. I don't consider myself a Blame America First person. That might be how it comes out. Maybe I am, and I just don't realize it yet. Maybe I'm a denier.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not the first to want to blame America First. It just seems like we're always freaking to blame.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's, you know.
Well, and the point that I was going to make, you know, is that if you'll remember that while we're talking about how all these countries may use nuclear weapons, and so we have to maintain, you know, more than 10,000 nuclear weapons, which, you know, could destroy the entire Earth five times over or something. That, you know, while we're talking about how we have to be worried about everybody else in the world and their access to nuclear weapons, the only country that has ever used a nuclear weapon against another country is the United States.
Yeah. You know, it's true.
So while we're out there fear-mongering about other countries...
Yeah.
Without any real reason.
We've done it.
Yeah. Other countries have absolute reason to fear the United States because we've done it before.
Yeah. There you go.
And on that promising note.
Right.
I guess we're going to call this one. Unless you got something more you want to throw in there.
No, I think we about summed everything up. And fascinating stuff with the Afghanistan. Like I said, I haven't read much into it yet. So I'm kind of excited to dig my teeth in some.
Yeah, I have been reading on that since that information came out.
Yeah.
Like pretty much all my free time has gone to reading about this.
Yeah.
And then I watched a little bit of Netflix too. But
mostly
reading
mostly
about
this thing,
Afghanistan papers.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, like, so there was a lot in the news this week that we haven't gotten to address at all.
Yeah.
There's, you know, of course, there's the whole IG report.
Yeah.
That's probably important.
Yeah.
I've read a little bit about that I wasn't reading about the Afghanistan papers. You know, that was right there
stuck
front
your head
center.
In there, yeah.
And so that's probably so. I'm gonna go ahead and say now a couple of topics that we're probably going to talk about next episode.
All right.
Hopefully that'll entice people and say, yeah, I would like to see what they have to say about that.
Yeah.
So one of those things is has got to be the IG report.
Yeah, we need to dig into that.
And the other one, I think, is this executive order that Trump just signed about anti-Semitism.
Well,
yeah, I think that that's an important point because they're using some outside definitions of anti-Semitism that include things that are really just criticisms of the Israeli government.
Yeah. Ah, really?
Yeah.
That's an interesting way to interpret.
I think it's obvious if you look at it, but we'll talk about
we
it.
We should get into that.
So those, at least those topics probably, unless something really crazy happens, which who knows.
I mean, well, we know impeachment will start or will be official, I guess, by next week.
Yeah, but that's barely a story.
You wouldn't think so listening to the media, man. Well, like, I know. All they talk about. It's crazy, man. And no, everybody knows where it's going to end is what's so crazy.
Yeah.
Like, even when they're reporting it on it, it's everybody knows, but they still talk on about it on the end.
Yeah. Well, that's the important story is how, you know, Trump, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. He did bad thing. Yeah. Orange man bad.
Yeah. That's been the story since November of 2016, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll maybe hit impeachment stuff. I doubt
if, that. If something interesting happens with it. I mean, if it plays out the way it looks like it will, there's not much to talk about.
But IG report, important and interesting stuff.
There's stuff there. We definitely got to dig into that one.
Yeah, and the anti-Semitism thing I think is important too because it really starts to infringe on some really basic rights.
Yeah.
All this and more.
On the next episode.
On the next episode of the Liberty Mic when we finally get this right. In the meantime, you know, follow us on Facebook, share and like and subscribe on iTunes and share and like there. You know, positive reviews are great. And we have a website. Oh, I did have an article posted at the Libertarian Institute this week.
That's right.
What was it called? Oh, Government Intrusion Laid Bare. If you found something interesting in our podcast a couple of weeks ago about the public nudity and all that stuff, I wrote a whole article about it,
and I enjoyed writing it,
and they put it up at the Libertarian Institute, where they've been very gracious in accepting pretty much everything that I've sent to them. Actually, everything that I've sent to them.
Yeah. It's because everything you put together has been good. When you finish articles, they're good, man.
That's the hard part. Finishing an article is the hard part.
Yeah.
You know, again, keep following and liking and doing positive things for us and helping us spread the messages and
absolutely and, gotta fight the good fight.
Yep. And so until next time, ciao.
Later.